Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, the trade deadline has passed.
Yes.
Hockey Hanukkah is gone.
It's over.
The dust has settled. We have our comments on all of the team's moves. But first, dude, a pressing topic.
What's that?
Have you been following this Charlie Sheen nonsense, dude?
No, not really at all. You know, I've just basically been, following the Sharks who have been...
Winning. Duh. Winning.
Oh, man. Watching him on 2020 last night, it was disturbing and exciting. It's really like looking at a car accident. You know, everybody just slows down. You just can't help but watch. He's living with these two porn stars. Oh, I'm sorry, a model and a porn star.
Right.
Who are sitting there with his two children. And he is out of his mind, dude.
It's awesome.
He's saying some crazy stuff.
Like,
you know, I'm an F-18, bro, and I will destroy you in the air, and I will deploy my ordnance to the ground.
I think you have my favorite, though. This is my favorite thing that he's been saying.
I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
Oh, man.
And you did a drug test.
Yeah.
And he's as clean as Barry Bonds, dude.
Yeah.
Evidently.
That's awesome.
Whoa.
Hey, now.
He's as clean as Jordan Tutu.
Well,
too far? Too soon?
Yes. That's way too soon, dude.
Sorry, Dad.
How dare you, sir?
Oh. We don't like him, though.
No,
we can
never
mock him to our heart's content.
Well, according to Theo Fleury, that's just out of bounds.
Out
of bounds, dude.
I'm driving all the way from New Mexico to Calgary on an 8-ball. Let's go.
But don't ever mention that again during a game, because that's just below the belt.
Where should we start?
Winning. Winning.
We should start with the Sharks.
Winning.
Yeah.
The Sharks are on fire, dude.
Yes.
With a nice little win streak going here again. We last talked to you after a win in Detroit.
Winning.
The Sharks... I think we thought we'd have a letdown game in Pittsburgh, and that didn't happen in the end, did it?
Winning.
No, that was actually... Sharks won all three games since the last podcast in overtime or the shootout. So it's pretty amazing that they can win on the road in Pittsburgh, come home, or not come home quite yet, but a tough game in Calgary, and then come home. And then a tougher game than I imagined against Colorado last night. I didn't think the Sharks were really on top of their game, but I definitely saw more of the Colorado team that I think we're used to seeing. We saw them really kind of fold a couple weeks ago, right after they made that trade. And this time they seem to have their chutzpah back. Certainly they were working pretty hard trying to win the game, and they almost did if it weren't for an amazing Joe Thornton deflection. And then Ryan Clough coming up huge in the shootout again.
Pure money.
Yeah.
That guy, unstoppable.
It's so great because now he's obviously in the goaltender's head, because he faked that backhand move against Kiprusoff in the Calgary game, and Kiprusoff like practically slid all the way to the corner. He pushed so hard to that side.
I'm not gonna fall for it. Everybody else doesn't play it. I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna overplay it.
Whoops. Dun dun dun. Yeah, and then he just goes forehand and you know scores into five of the 6 feet of the net were open, and then he just goes forehand on Brian Elliott last night and scores the only goal in the shootout. So the Sharks win again in the shootout. So, man.
Which win was more impressive to you? The Pittsburgh win coming off the Detroit victory, or the win in Calgary, dude?
I'd have to say Calgary. Pittsburgh has not been... I mean, let's just face it. They don't have all of their guns. They're missing Kunitz. They're missing Crosby. They're missing Malkin. I thought they played hard against us at home. But the fact is they're pretty decimated by injuries, and Calgary was on a run at home. That's a big win, especially the comeback win. So
I agree.
That's the number one win of the week.
A good win, playing without Boyle.
Yeah.
Know, to be able to go in there. A lot of guys picking up the slack. You know, Calgary is right now the fifth seed in the Western Conference. We know that this is very fluid and changes daily. But right now, Calgary is definitely in the playoff picture where they were out of it and kind of not quite in New Jersey territory, but teetering extinction about 2 months ago. And they've put a nice little 6-2-2 run together. They've got a real good record at home. We'll see if they can keep it up as they head out on the road. But a real good win, dude. Got to be feeling good right now. Sharks all of a sudden have a 4-point lead in the Pacific Division.
That's right, over Phoenix, and the trade deadline's come and gone, so we'll get to that in a second. But you want to talk about the trade deadline now, or do we want to talk about the Big Sharks news of the week now?
Let's talk about Big Sharks news.
Okay, so the Big Sharks news, for those who haven't heard, Antti Niemi was re-signed to a
Who would not have heard?
Well, you never know. Not everybody is peeled to TSN night and day like we are, dude. You know, they could be out
winning
or something like that. Or
I think even somehow Charlie Sheen knew about this.
I am on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
I think he was a little busy on the Charlie Sheen drug. But Antti Niemi signed to a 4-year contract extension by the Sharks, a little bit less than $4 million per year. So that certainly solidifies the Sharks' goaltending situation here for the next little while. And for those who are remembering, Andrew Ninomaki is under contract next year for $2 million. So we're talking about an overall goalie cap hit of around $5 to $5.5 million next year, which is something I noted on Twitter. I hope you guys are all following us on Twitter because we're tweeting like crazy now.
We're tweet masters.
I don't know.
We're tweet-tastic.
How do we just like turn over the page and now we're tweeting like crazy?
Because I don't know.
I've had the account for a year.
We go with the social media of the day.
We do.
Right now we're on a Twitter kick. We'll come back to you, Facebook. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You don't stop changing your formatting on us. I hate you, Facebook.
Oh, no. Thanks to the new pages.
We like the King's Speech. We don't like you. Dude, that... Sidetrack. Dude, King's Speech.
Yeah.
Beating out my favorite movie of the year, dude.
Social Network?
Jackass 3D.
That is quite the upset, I admit.
How could that not have won?
I don't know, dude.
I'm very upset.
Maybe it's all the dog poop.
So what is your take on this contract? Dude, this is quite a commitment to Antti Niemi.
Well, you know, the thing is that Doug Wilson, we've certainly given him some grief over the past few seasons here since we started the podcast about maybe re-signing people too early or for too much money. I certainly can't go as far as to say that that's what happened here. But if we put this in market terms, this is not a buy low, sell high situation. This is a buy high situation, right? So Doug Wilson re-signed Antti Niemi to a contract when he was playing his best hockey of the season, probably the best hockey of his career. So am I glad that Niemi is under contract for the Sharks? Yes, because frankly, if they had to go and go and swim in the free market waters next summer, I'm not so sure they'd come out with anybody very good. But I wonder if the timing was right on this particular deal. Dude, what do you think?
I think that it's so lame to sit on the fence right now, but I think that the jury is out until we find out how this team finishes.
Mm-hmm.
If the Sharks get bounced in the first or second round, and now we're staring at Antti Niemi going, great, we're right where we were last year. Fantastic.
Right.
We're so glad you're going to be here for four more years. Not to say if we bowed out that it would be his fault.
No,
you know?
No.
But the point was to go in a different direction and to be able to advance, you know, to take the next step. Right now, the deal looks good because Niemi is, you know, this is his second week in a row to be in like the top three stars in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably the hottest goalie this calendar year.
Yeah.
And if we were going now, before you shoot me daggers, if we were going in 2011, he would have to be in the Vezina conversation based on 2011 stats only. Now, I think his first half of the year will completely negate him from being anywhere close to that conversation.
Right.
But in 2011, the first 2 months, he's been top three goalie in the league. Don't you think?
He's been great. I'd have to look at some stats. I didn't do a big breakdown of all the goalies out there, but I'd say pretty comfortably top five.
He's close.
Yeah.
He's in the conversation.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I think a month ago we were talking about how maybe he was not even an above average goaltender.
That's right.
So I guess my concern is that the Sharks' best prospects are goaltenders, really. Besides mm-hmm. Charlie Coyle, you know, we're high on Marek Videnski.
Right.
But
we're still high on Nick Patrecki.
We're still high on Nick Patrecki, but you got we are high on Alex Stalock, Tyson Sexsmith. It appears that they've lost some, maybe a little bit of confidence in him, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Harry Sateri fit into all this? You know, he's still over in Europe. Wait, what does this say about, one, the health of Alex Stalock,
mm-hmm.
and two, their confidence in this in their goalie prospects, because this contract is close to unmovable, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't know how the market changes, right? Because some years there's a lot of goalies available and other years there's not. And we could very well see a situation in a couple years. It seems like a lot of teams are locking up goaltenders for a long time. I think I saw on Cap Geek he might have a limited no movement. Is that what? Am I just making that up? I can't remember exactly what additional situations are there in the contract. But, you know, a plus $5 million contract is really tough to move these days. And he's not there. He's 4 years under $16 million. So he's under $4 million a year. I wouldn't qualify that contract as an unmovable deal. Okay.
But when's, I guess,
as a start,
as I'm getting ready to shoot myself in the foot, but
again,
when's the last time you saw a goalie with a plus $3 million deal get traded?
Habib Bulin? Traded, or was that? No, that was free agency.
Free agency.
He went to the. Was he traded to Edmonton?
No, he signed there by his own free will.
So, yeah, so we're not seeing a lot of guys.
No,
moving
you
around.
Don't. So, I think this is all in.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and you wouldn't trade him if he's playing well.
Right.
So, you know, if he's underperforming or if he's back to the guy that we saw at the beginning of the year for a long stretch, you know, you're kind of. You're in.
Yeah.
You're in. Now, I'm not worried about this because the guy has been, I mean, this is his best save percentage of his career,
mm-hmm.
even though it's only a 2-year career.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pretty good year last year, 912 save percentage of the regular season, 919 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's climbing. So, yeah, you're definitely buying high.
Yeah, this is a buying high situation. That's my only problem with it in. Like you said, I think you're right. The jury is still out on this. We want to hear from you. Questions at dudesonhockey.com. I'd like to hear what you think about this trade. The cap situation puts the Sharks about, like I said, $5 million for both goalies, which isn't an unmanageable figure for goaltenders. You see lots of goaltenders. I mean, Jean-Sebastien Giguère is making $6 million plus, and that's just, and he's not even really their starter anymore.
Right.
So, you know, there's other teams that are in much worse goalie versus money trouble than the Sharks would be next year, even if Niemi turns out to be not quite the master that we've seen these past couple of months.
It does put the Sharks in a very interesting salary situation next year, though.
Yeah.
With the cap, and according to Cap Geek's 2011-12 cap calculator, we've got the Sharks at just under $7.6 million of cap space with 14 guys signed. That's Heatley, Thornton, Marlowe, Mitchell, Clough, Pavelski, Couture up front. So we're really missing five forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Boyle, Murray, Braun, Demers, Vlasic on the back end with Niemi and Nitimaki.
So we're the big missing players are, for me, that we don't know about, are Setoguchi and Ian White.
Right.
So those are the two
and
big ones.
And that could very well eat up that 7.5 or well, come pretty darn close.
I would be surprised if they both approach $7 million. That would be very surprising to me. I think six combined may be a little bit more realistic, and I would consider it a nice victory if we could get both of them for under six.
That's possible. Setoguchi is still a restricted free agent. They might just continue to one-year him
mm-hmm.
in order to stay under you know, right. a reasonable salary consideration.
And that's assuming Justin Braun's in the lineup every night, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's assuming Braun is in the lineup. So we won't get too far into this today, but it does put the Sharks in a little bit of a pickle salary-wise. There'll be an interesting salary dance coming up here, dude.
Right, right.
But for right now, it's happy times.
It is happy times.
Because the Sharks are streaking in the right direction.
They are indeed.
And they're certainly what, Charlie Sheen?
What are you? Dude, I'm sorry. You got to give me a little bit more notice.
Winning.
Ah!
So let's talk about the trade deadline, dude, because we had a fun show last week talking about all these huge trades that happened. And I wouldn't say that there were as many massive blockbuster trades of the same kind of stature as, say, Eric Johnson being traded for Stewart and Shattenkirk, but there certainly wasn't a nice volume of trades. There was a ton, a big long list here that we can talk about. Of course, we're not going to hit all of them, but we should probably concentrate on the Pacific. You know, the Hawks made some deals. The Hawks made a deal that I think is important. Certainly Anaheim made several deals. Phoenix made a deal, and Brad Richards stayed in Dallas, the non-deal, which maybe is newsworthy. So let's touch on the Yotes. I mean, they traded Scotty Upshaw and Samuel Pisto, and they got a defenseman. Is this something to care about one way or another, or is this just one of those things?
I don't think it matters.
Okay, because Phoenix is second in the Pacific behind us, so that's why I bring it up first.
I'm actually surprised that they traded Scotty Upshaw. He seems to be kind of what they're all about. I mean, that guy has a motor that doesn't quit. Does he maybe play a little bit too aggressively sometimes? Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he seems, I don't know. I mean, Shane Doan's kind of the motor of that team, but Scotty Upshaw seems to be such an energy type guy that really embodies what Dave Tippett wants to do. Mm-hmm. He's unrestricted next year. They must have just decided that they weren't going to be able to pay him. So you bring in a guy like Klesla, who, doesn't he have back problems? Isn't he sort of disappointing anyways? Yeah, he's got some size. I think this speaks volumes about Jovo's long-term future in Phoenix as well.
Right. That's true. I mean, he's getting long of the tooth as it is, so it's not like Jovo is going to be, you know, patrolling the blue line for the next 6 years for the Phoenix Coyotes.
I don't think Phoenix got better because of this trade. I think this is a non-factor. You know, I'm sure Joe Thornton's quaking in his boots looking at Michael Roosevelt and and Klesluck as he's coming down the middle. He's probably just got a giant grin on his face.
Yeah.
Bring it.
Well, dude, let's go to the blockbuster. Probably the biggest trade of the trade deadline day, and that is Dustin Penner being traded to the Los Angeles Kings for Colton Tubert, who is a guy we remember being traded early in the first round, another first-round pick, and then a conditional third-round pick to the Edmonton Oilers. So the Edmonton Oilers shed some salary. Certainly a couple years back, Dustin Penner's contract was considered to be one of the dumber contracts in the NHL. I don't know if we'd go that far anymore. He's a pretty decent player, but you know, this is sort of the power forward guy that you would like to see maybe next to Anze Kopitar. Is this a huge upgrade for the Kings? Does this put them in a place where they could be dangerous in the playoffs? Or is this just Dean Lombardi trying to make up for what I would consider to be a fairly disappointing year by the Los Angeles Kings?
I think this is one of those deals where both teams come out good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's good for Edmonton.
They got
They got a lot for him. You know, Tubert is a good defensive prospect with a little bit of a mean streak. I've already got some guys like that going pretty strong over there with, Theo Peckham. You know, mm-hmm. I like that guy. You know, Tubert, you know, probably will start seeing some time over there fairly soon.
I would think.
First, and then a conditional third that could turn into a second, I think, depending on what happens with the Kings. I think if they win the cup, yeah, okay, come on. But
that's not going to happen.
Dustin Penner, dude, for lack of a better term, and I'm going to go Steven Tyler on you here. You're going to have to censor me.
Huh?
It's time for Dean Lombardi to or get off the pod, dude. Okay?
Okay.
It's time.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a decent core there, and you're just going to keep, like, holding your cards and not be willing to go fish. You got to go for it at some point and And Dustin Penner maybe was the best that he could do. They've still got a lot of cap room to make a run at Richards and have him reject them over the summer.
Right. So yeah.
I think it's a good move for both teams, and it certainly makes LA better. It's a big body, you know?
I think it makes LA better without a doubt, because none of the stuff that they gave up was playing. So There's no question the LA got better. I still think they overpaid for Dustin Penner. Because, I mean, Dustin Penner is making more money than Ryan Klo, and I would consider Ryan Klo to be a far superior player. So, I mean, maybe that's one-off example, but still.
Tambellini did a good job. I mean, he had Dean Lombardi bent over the barrel. You know, he's chasing any sort of high-profile forward that was out there. There wasn't a lot to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Once Richards was basically off the table, he had to overpay to get Penner. And evidently they were asking for even more for Alex Hemsky, which I think is hilarious. Actually, I would think
Alex Hemsky is a more skilled player. I think he's their best player.
But Alex Hemsky can't even put together a full season.
That's true.
You know, and when you look at what the Kings need, I think if they got Hemsky, who cares? You know, you blow on that guy, he falls down. My hip. It's like an old woman.
To me, I think that might be a better fit with Kopitar, just personally. But I think Penner and Kopitar together could be pretty interesting. Although, we're starting to get to the place, I know we had this conversation over IM a few days ago, where, you know, I kept seeing great things for Kopitar, and now I feel like, okay, maybe this kid's plateaued a little bit, and I thought he was going to be a superstar, and now he's just a really, really good player.
Yeah, we talked about the Sedin twins sort of being in this category where they were almost, when they signed that long contract, it was almost funny.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, Vancouver is not, you know, they're kind of a joke, and they're soft, and Vancouver is a cupcake. And now they're probably the favorite to win the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're a huge reason for it, because they got a better supporting cast. And, you know, Kopitar, you know, you look at the Kings power play now, one unit will have Ryan Smith in front. The other unit will have Dustin Penner. There's going to be no break for, you know, defense penalty kills. So I think it's a win for both.
Okay.
For both, dude.
Well, I haven't seen Dustin Penner play a ton, so we're going to certainly be playing the Kings here later this season. So I'm going to keep a keen eye towards Dustin Penner and see how much better he makes them.
Delightful.
I know you wanted to talk about the Ducks, because both of us are extremely excited by the moves that the Ducks have made, because it seems like Murray thinks that the Ducks are one way, and we think they're a completely different way. And it seems like he's trying to build this team at the deadline like they're going to make a legitimate cup run. And right now, they're 4 or 5 points out of the playoffs. They're not even there. And he's making depth moves for Brad Winchester. He's trading his backup, Curtis McElhinney, for Dan Ellis.
That was a dump. That's that's just getting rid of somebody.
Yeah, but Dan Ellis is an upgrade over Curtis McElhinney. I mean, that's like, okay, well, Hiller might be hurt, so we need to get a decent number one in case, you know, Hiller can't continue, so we better go get Ellis for the deep cup run. And it's like, really?
Well, you look at his roster, besides his top line, I mean, he's got a bunch of old fogies running around in the second, you know, Jason Blake, Koivu, Solani.
Yeah.
You know, in the back of his mind, he's probably thinking to himself, this is maybe my last shot with those guys.
Yeah,
although Jason Blake's probably signed for like 7 more years or something or whatever. But Koivu and Solani, I think, are at the end of their deals, or they got 1 year. This is the end for them. So they were going to give it a shot. But trading picks and prospects like Jake Gardner and a third round pick for a guy like Brad Winchester.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, what are you doing, man? What imaginary cup run are you going on here?
Right. Winchester?
I would love to play them in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it. You know, you've got a really great top line. But Cam Fowler's like a minus 3,000. You know, he's doing all right on the power play. But, you know, the kid, even strength, is got a lot of growing up to do. But they're doing the right thing playing him.
Right.
But let's be real here. You know, come on.
They're not in a position.
Bob Murray, my brother, you're overstepping your bounds here a little bit. And he's doing such a good job that they gave him an extension. So more Ducks mediocrity, dude.
I hope so.
Look at what a great job he's done since he's taken over that team.
Yeah, not really.
They've been such a threat.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
No.
And good job.
So good for us, though. Good for us. Dude, let's hit some other high points. Actually, let's go straight to winners and losers so we can talk about some other trades. I'll talk about a winner. You talk about a loser.
Okay.
My winner's Washington Capitals.
Okay.
I like their move for Dennis Weidman. I think they got Weidman for a song. They went and got some good second, third line center in Jason Arnott, who we've seen do very well in the playoffs, both in Nashville and with New Jersey over the years. Don't forget, I think he was on Dallas for their... He wasn't on Dallas for their cup run, but I know he was on New Jersey for at least one of their cups.
Yes.
So certainly Jason Arnott is a tough player. He's a big player. He's a gritty player, and he knows how to play in the playoffs. That is a good pickup for them. And Weidman is a great pickup, especially if Green's health is not for certain. He certainly is a guy that I've liked for a couple years. I wish the Sharks had made a run at him once upon a time, and I think it makes the Caps a lot better. So I think the Caps are the winner here on this trade deadline day. You have any argument with that, dude, or you have another winner?
No,
that you like?
I think that the Caps definitely improve themselves, and it's a window of opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pens are on the down right now.
Yeah.
Their
season is very much in doubt. I mean, who comes back?
Their season is in jeopardy. They're going to make the playoffs, but they're not going to be, you know, an extreme. They're going to work hard, and we saw them work hard.
Mm-hmm.
But that team is a significant talent downgrade when you take away Crosby and Malkin and
Kunitz
and other very valuable players on that team. You know, it's just not going to be the same opponent
right.
that you would normally be playing.
I mean, if it weren't for Chris Letang being just an absolute stud, they might be in real trouble of fading really quickly. I think they're going to gut it out and make the playoffs. But, you know, Boston certainly seemed to make the right moves at the right time, trying to gear up for the playoffs, because Pittsburgh's definitely vulnerable. And Philadelphia is as good as they've been, but they're a little quiet these days. So I think Boston and the Caps definitely see an opportunity here that the Pittsburgh's not the obvious front runner that they would be if they were healthy.
So I've got a clear loser here, dude.
I think we agree on this one.
What is Dale Talon doing in Florida?
He's
certainly, definitely is not
winning.
No, not even close. It's just let me break it down for you.
Yeah, break
okay,
it down for me.
He traded three of his top four defensemen. Right,
mm-hmm.
He basically gave away Dennis Weidman, who is a guy who we've coveted for the Sharks. You know, a really solid top two blue liner, a guy who signed for another year. He has 33 points this year. He goes to Washington. He's going to make them even better. I mean, him and Green running around up there, that's going to be very, very solid for them. And in return, you get a third round pick and basically a value meal, which is like an ECHL guy, a guy who's not even registering in the top like 30 prospects for the Washington Capitals.
Right.
That's what you get?
He signed for another year. When I heard that deal, I thought, okay, well, Weidman's a UFA, and they got less than they probably should have for an unrestricted free agent. But no, Weidman's got a whole nother year on his deal. He's locked in.
It's a joke. That's a joke.
The worst deal of the trade deadline day by far.
By far. Brian McCabe, I think, probably had Talon in a little bit of a rough spot. They wanted to move him. He probably only was going to approve a move to the Rangers. So he goes to New York. You get a third round pick for McCabe, and you get Kennedy, who mm-hmm. is a guy who's bounced around now from Buffalo to the Rangers, now to the Panthers. He can't even play in the NHL.
Yeah.
He's in the AHL. So you get that guy. You couldn't even get, like, you couldn't get a prospect out of them. You couldn't get Matt Gilroy out of them.
That's too much.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you say, okay, we don't even want the pick. We want Matt Gilroy.
Right.
I mean, come on. Like, can you try and drive a hard bargain here or what?
He needs to watch more Pawn Stars.
Okay, the Weidman one's bad, dude. This is horrible. All right? Okay, no, Weidman's the worst.
Weidman's
this is
the
second worst.
Second worst.
You trade Brian Allen, a guy who plays 19 minutes a night for you, just a solid, has some injury problems, but a solid guy. You trade him to Carolina for Sergei Samsonov, a guy that Dale Talon waived in 2008. He waived him. He loved him so much in Chicago that he waived him. And now he traded to get him
back.
He traded
one of his top four.
I know. Okay. It's probably a salary thing. All right. He wanted to move Brian Allen. Samsonov's making close to even money.
Mm-hmm.
You trade him. And then you're going to let him go. But, gosh, are you kidding?
Yeah. That's bad. I mean, Florida is... And the real question in my mind is, if they just went and had the fire sale, which they obviously did, why didn't they trade Vokoun? You can get something for him.
Well, apparently, I heard at the end they got an offer for Vokoun, but he said it was unacceptable. What was it? I mean, what was it? All these other offers were acceptable?
Yeah. I guess someone really lowballed him after seeing that Weidman deal. They're like, we'll give you, how about a 7th-round pick and a bucket of extra crispy? I mean,
I'll throw in this belly button lint. Come on, dude. So the Florida Panthers trade, maybe, you know, I guess Kulikov you probably would put above Allen. Mm-hmm. They trade 3 of their 4 best NHL ready defensemen, and in return they got 2 3rd-round picks and 2 guys who can't play in the NHL, and Sergei Samsonov, who, you know, probably is one of the most disappointing yeah. forwards in the last 4 years. I mean, this guy's yeah. like Michael Ryder territory.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, right?
True. You're right. I don't know what Florida was thinking.
He's got he's played for 5 teams in the last 3 years.
Yeah, so. He's just not
Come
any good.
Come on. Yep. Awful. Any other winners, dude?
No, that's the big winner for me, I think.
I think Vancouver is a small winner.
They've got depth. They've got Chris Higgins, who I've never liked. I don't know why they would get Chris Higgins, but if they need some depth in the 3rd and 4th lines, then I guess that's okay. They got Maxim LaPierre from Anaheim. I guess it's okay.
Yeah, this is... they didn't give up...
They didn't give up a lot.
Much, you know, these are the type of guys that... You know, LaPierre is going to be there, Scott Nichol, and...
Mm-hmm.
Higgins will just play, let him play 8 minutes a night. I think for them, that's a clear sign that they feel like this is their time. This mm-hmm. is their opportunity, chance to build a little bit of veteran depth, take some pressure off some of their prospects who maybe are playing more than they should right now. And Vancouver in the playoffs, will they melt or will they be strong? That's
the big question
we don't know the answer to. We've got some emails, dude.
Got some emails. Got one from Robin. It might be Robin. Yeah, I think it's Robin.
It's Robin.
Yeah.
This is...
He was reading an article on the best and least valuable players for the dollar, and Ian White came in on the most valuable listing for defenders.
Of course.
Pretty shrewd addition to the club, and despite having a less successful season than years past, they might be in a better frame of mind come playoffs this time, and... an expert might be hanging their hat on the fin. So who of the all-star, so his eventual question is, who of the all-star cast could be making a greater contribution since Seto, Demers, and Klo have really stepped up? So who do you think? I mean, there's an obvious candidate, but
Heatley.
Yeah. I mean, Heatley's the sort of the go-to, but he's really not playing that badly. I don't think. And, you know, I think Drew Amend has been on his case lately, and that puts him more in the forefront of people's minds. But I think we've seen some comments in the blog lately, or maybe it was an email, that say, you know, his defensive stats really aren't that bad. And maybe he looks a little googly out there, or wobbly or whatever. And he's not just running around the way Torrey Mitchell does, say. But, you know, his even strength goals against numbers are actually pretty decent. He's not just like a massive disaster on defense. And he does play on the penalty kill. So...
He's way off his career numbers.
He's way
numbers.
Off his career numbers
he
in
is
scoring.
Way off his career numbers.
All that being said, you're right.
I think for the Sharks to advance in the playoffs, Danny Heatley is going to have to be a much bigger factor than he is in the regular season.
Right. I
and
agree with that
100%. Maybe we'll see the reverse of how it went last year, where Heatley was hurt mm-hmm. in the playoffs, was a non-factor for much of it, and didn't really help us get right. very far. And then you've got not really helping that much on the stat sheet this year. And in the playoffs, maybe he'll go bonanza. I don't know, dude.
I hope so.
That would be my answer. I think, you know, you could also point to Patrick Marleau at times. You know, he seems to show up in big moments
mm-hmm.
and then disappear for stretches. But and it's hard to jump on the boys right now when they're winning.
Winning. All right, let's go to Tom. Tom's got me a detailed stats question, which is pretty cool. But Tom gives us a table of the top NHL teams in terms of their power play percentage, plus their penalty killing percentage. And he says, you know, over the years, it's kind of been used that 100 combined is a pretty good number. And if you look at the table, the Sharks are actually number two. Their power play percentage is 22.6, penalty kill 81.9 for a total of 104.5. Only Vancouver is better. So he says, interestingly, the Sharks are ranked second, which sounds about right. I'm wondering how much do you guys think can be based on these numbers? And is this a true indication that the Sharks are a much better team than the record had previously indicated for most of the season? Other interesting teams, Minnesota is number four overall, and Philly isn't even in the top 15. So what do you make of this, dude? Is this a good sign, a bad sign? You know, how much stock would you put in, you know, a statistic like this?
I think the fact that Philly is not in the top of the table and they're still, in my opinion, probably one of the three best teams in the NHL.
Right.
That doesn't make me feel fantastic about this table.
Mm-hmm.
But table aside, the fact the Sharks for most of the first, you know, two thirds of the season couldn't hold on to one goal leads in the third period, how does that factor into this table? It doesn't.
Right.
So, I don't know. You're more big in stats than I am. What do you make of this?
The thing is, because I'd have to look at it a little bit more, but I'm not sure that they should be weighted the same in terms of adding one to the other straight on, because the PK number is always so much bigger. And, you know, you see a lot of variation in PK. Like you see, on this table, for instance, only in the top 15, you see from 77% to 87%. So you see a range of about 10. For power play, you only see a range of about 4 or 5. You know, a bad team is like 17%, and then you have like 22%. So, you know, I think that it's a little bit more heavily weighted towards PK and not weighted maybe enough for power play numbers. But I think it's a fair representation. But the funny thing is that I remember in the past years when the Sharks were just lights out on the power play and the penalty kill, and they were top five in the NHL in both, and everyone's like, oh, they can't score at even strength. And then, you know, they have good even strength numbers, and then they go, and then people say, oh, well, they can't score the power play. That's when you got to score most of your goals. So, to be perfectly honest, you can sort of see this either way. I find this as an encouraging sign, but I don't think this is a sign that the Sharks are better than we think they are. I think this is just a, for me, it's just a confirmation that the Sharks, you know, are there. They're among, you know, the best teams in the NHL in certain things, you know, top 10 or so. That's sort of where I would put the Sharks in terms of their league standing right now, around the top 10, the third in the West.
Who's the 14th team in that table?
The New York Islanders.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a little strange. So clearly there's some anomalies here. But it's an interesting stat, Tom, and I have heard of it before, and I appreciate the email.
Thanks,
so,
Tom.
Anyway, do we have anything on, like, Twitter or anything else, dude? I think we're pretty well set.
Someone was looking for us at Una Mas last night.
I know.
I wasn't at the game. Were you not hanging out at your usual spot?
I don't usually hang out at Una Mas.
That's not true.
Okay.
You love to sip a cerveza and watch people eat nachos.
Well, dude.
Winning.
I'm all about winning, you know?
I'm on a drug. It's called Charlie Sheen.
I was on drugs last night. I was on Charlie
Sheen.
Dude,
is it time for your favorite segment?
Which segment would that be?
And mine. Oh, you know what time it is. It's story time.
Well, do it live! it. Do it live!
All right.
No, dude. It's my turn to get back at you.
Sounds good.
Getting to know you. Getting to know all about you.
All right, this is the Getting to Know Your Podcaster segment. Dude, what do you have in store for us this week?
Well, you know, there's a few stories. I could go with a recent one where you had your skates abducted by some child's mother. But I'm not going to go with that. I'm actually going to go back to our youth, dude. I'm going to reach back, you know.
Wow.
Some of you have been listening for a long time know that Mike and I have known each other for, I would say we've been friends for 20 years.
We're getting
almost close.
Yeah, getting close to 20 years.
And back in high school, we were both neither talented enough to play high school basketball. So in order to...
I know what story this is.
In order to flex our athletic muscles, I convinced Mike, who actually didn't really like basketball that much, but...
Still don't.
convinced him to play in the Mormon Basketball League. Now, neither of us are Mormon, but we had a friend who was, Taft. We called him Taft. And they were allowed to have a few non-Mormons on the roster.
Right.
You had to have, what was it? You had to have three Mormons on the court.
At all times.
Two non-Mormons could be on the court. So Mike and I happened to be the two non-Mormons on the court at the time. And I'm all 5'9" of me. I was the Charles Barkley of the Mormon
League.
Yeah,
Doug was posting people up. Doug had great fundamentals, unfortunately never got the height that he truly deserved. Had a decent post game, and I was just basically trying to use what little athleticism I had to run around the court because I couldn't shoot.
All right, so Mike was scrappy. Mike was the Tyrone Hill of our Mormon League team. He was very scrappy. Those of you who followed the Golden State Warriors for a while, you know what I mean. He liked to rebound. He played good D. So Mike's going for a loose ball, and these two guys, bigger guys than Mike, come towards him. Mike's diving for the ball. And he gets completely sandwiched by these two guys. He's just completely flattened and just crumbles to the ground, you know. And being the overprotective, overdramatic friend that I am, I went completely bananas. And I was going to start a fight in the Mormon gym with these two guys who had no intention of, like, harming. But Mike is laying there on the ground like a wilted flower.
Dude.
And I had to come to your rescue, dude.
And you did.
I did.
A little bit too late.
I got a technical foul.
Doug got teed up in the Mormon League.
Because I said a terrible word.
Yeah.
And
I think you thoroughly embarrassed most of the Mormons there.
I did. And I'm proud of that moment.
Doug almost
started. I just
started
wanted you to say, dude, you know, I don't, whenever you're telling a story about me, I don't want you to forget.
Mm-hmm. That you had my back in Mormon League.
Who
great.
Who the round mound of rebound is. It is me.
Next time I'm getting beat up at Gymboree, dude, I'll call you.
I could take a three-year-old, dude. I definitely could.
I know that you could. All right, dude. We're getting at the end of our time here, but it's been a good week. Good week for the Sharks.
Yeah, some big games coming up. Detroit tomorrow. Dallas on Saturday.
Yeah.
Be really great if the Sharks could get 4 points out of this, and we'll definitely be back next week to recap it.
Winning.
Let's keep it going.
Hopefully there'll be some more.
Winning.
Let's throw a rooster in there, just one more before we go.
Okay.
Fire it up.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week, same time, same place.
Later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.